Isn't her voice beautiful? Lorena McKinnon. She's a bonny Scottish lassie. Well, I wanted to tell you about something. And this is purely, I mean, this is my deal here. I know you've been listening to a lot of spots from our beloved sponsors, and we love them because they enable us to operate. But I don't know about you, but I usually wind up wanting something that's unavailable. And I was reading some stuff about the massive Texas drinking water radiation cover-up exposed, where apparently the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality is at least being accused. It is alleged that they are downplaying the radiation levels in water. Unacceptable levels of radioactivity were found in city water. And then, of course, there's the Fukushima fiasco, which was, I don't understand why those plants were built on a known fault in an area known for tsunami, but I think it must have had something to do with money. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go back into the mad scientist lab and see if I can find that thing. I know it's around here somewhere, and sure enough, I found it. Now, it's as big as a metal construction worker's lunch pail, but it's my old Geiger counter. And it is, I think it was made by Atomic Research out of Colorado, but it's an old one. It still works. You know, the batteries are like, I don't know, $50 a piece or something. But I wanted to share something with you. The last time that I was with you on this program, the venerated Coast to Coast AM was on 9/11, and of course nothing was happening then, and I'm only telling you about it now because I don't know when we'll meet again, so I will tell you about it. I went down the rabbit hole looking for a handheld radiation detector, and I found that they are in very, very short supply. But I used the phrase on the last show, the caravan to midnight, explaining that it does not necessarily mean the 6 minutes to midnight that the atomic scientists refer to when they speak of the doomsday clock and midnight. It doesn't mean that at all. In my view, it's that tipping point between what has been and what shall be. Cut a long story short, I've put together a website called caravantomidnight.com. That's not up yet because it'll be up next week. I got some bright kids working on it, and it's not done yet. I would have told you this once it was done, but again, I don't know when I'll speak to you next. Could be next week. Could be next month. Could be never. But, I mean, good Lord willing, we'll speak again soon. But in any case, if you'll go to that website next week, or if you just want some information, you can email as well to info@caravantomidnight.com. That's my little spot. And there I have partnered with some of my friends in Europe, in Western Europe, who have partnered with some of our friends in Eastern Europe. And we have obtained a limited quantity of personal radiation detectors that are about the size of a medium-sized cell phone. I mean, not a big one. It's not as big as a, you know, one of the big ones. I can't remember the name. It starts with an I. Not as big as that. And it measures gamma, beta, and X-ray, and it quantifies everything, and then it gives you a little reading. This is handy if you're at a grocery store and you walk over to the avocados, and it has a speaker function on it, and you hold it by the avocados and it begins to crackle, and you hold it by the oranges and it doesn't crackle, well, then you know to go with the oranges. But this thing can be used to check building materials, water, air, food, whatever. And if you're interested in something like that, which, as I say, I'm always interested in something that's not available, and this stuff is in very short supply. They are very reasonably priced. This is not a survivalist site that I've put up at all. It's sort of a security and enlightenment site. Some books that I am in the process of writing will become available at some point, some other people's books, and other things to enhance life, enhance and nurture life. So there you go. That's just a little tidbit. CaravanToMidnight.com. It'll be up and running Monday or Tuesday. So write it down and check it out. You might find something there that you really like. Now we have them from Phoenix all the way to Rochester, back up to Missouri, all the way down to Texas. And we're going to get to each and every one of your calls if you'll just stand by. I'm John B. Wells, and this is Coast to Coast AM. All right, let's get into it. Gilbert in Phoenix, west of the Rockies. Are you still there, man?
Hey, I'm at Sky Harbor hoping to catch a glimpse of that satellite. haven't seen it yet, so. Hey, I wanted to call. We guys are talking about that, you know, the mortgage and stuff, and I just wanted to talk about how, you know, I think a lot of people are upset about a lot of the injustices of you know, the big banks getting forgiven on a lot of their loans and getting, you know, money from the government, from the taxpayers. And yet, you remember that illustration in the Bible where a real rich a man owed billions and billions of dollars and he was forgiven his debt. But then when one of his people owed him only like $100, he went and enslaved the man because, you know, he couldn't pay the $100. And that's what happens like with the big banks. They got forgiven billions and billions of dollars, but yet you or me, why couldn't we be forgiven, say, give us 0% interest on our home loan, as long as we keep current, and instead of the bank losing $100,000 because it's vacant and the value goes down, and maybe because of them being gutted out in certain areas, the banks are willing to lose $100,000 on a home than to give you or me $4,000, say, a break to keep our home, but yet they're willing to be forgiven by the federal government and the taxpayers, of course. And so there's the injustice that the people see, that the banks get everything from the people, but yet when it comes to the average Joe like you or me, they're the first ones to kick you out of the house.
Oh, Gilbert.
They make it virtually impossible to help you. They say, oh, we can't help you because you don't have this form or you don't have that form. Or you know what I mean? And that's why I think when people get upset at the injustice.
Oh, well, I'm completely with you. Now, you just had to go and bring morals and ethics into it, didn't you? Now you've gone and done it. You know, there's an old expression, I'm sure you've heard it before, and I think it goes like this. The only one that can get a good deal is the one that doesn't need it.
Exactly. You know? Hey, you know what? I was going to tell you real quick about this. I saw it. It's a sign of the times. I saw it on Pawn Stars. A guy has a 1930 B12 Lincoln, and real quick, he wants to sell it for $100,000, and he agrees, okay, $95,000, but I want to get paid in gold. And so the pawn shop paid him in gold at $1,300 an ounce. And when they were filming it, and when it aired, it was like at $1,800 an ounce. And so there it goes, the sign of the times that, you know, the old man was smart and he was shooting. He says, you know what, I'm not going to sell my stuff for paper because I'm going to sell my expensive stuff for metal. And sure enough, that old man made more on the sale of that Lincoln and beat the pawn shop at their own game. But I'm just saying that's a sign of the times, the sign of the times that we're living in.
Oh, absolutely it is. And then again, if he cashes in the gold for the cash and then the cash goes away, then what happens? Then he may have wound up giving his car away. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it very much. Is James in Culver City out there? First-time caller.
Hey, John.
Hey, is that you, James?
It is.
Thanks for hanging in there. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling on behalf of my father. We're longtime listeners, and he got really irate today because we were watching the news, and according to the news, the Reinvestment and Recovery Act set by Obama, it was doing a tracking of who's getting the contracts, and supposedly a lot of them contracts are going to workers in mainland China to do the reconstruction on bridges, highways, various parts of America. And, I, you know, other than the outrage that you should have that all this, you know, this money that is meant for putting Americans back to work going to the people that hold most of our debt, I'm just wondering, why is it that it seems to me that the labor unions are so diehard for the people that are selling them out? I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
You know what? That's quite a good question. The thing about unions is, and this has been said before, back in the days when people did specialized work, I think of the sweatshops with the call them sweatshops, and they put all these women in there and just. You know, it's abominably hot. The working conditions are terrible. If there's a fire in there, they're not getting out. And so eventually they begin to unionize, and the plumbers unionize, and the carpenters unionize, everybody, the auto workers unionize, everybody unionizes. In the beginning, they seemed to have a real purpose. It really was to protect the workers, but now it's morphed into a political thing. These, you know, everybody thinks that things are going to stay the same. But they don't. They change and they morph. And, you know, there used to be this thing called the Peter Principle, where you take a person and you promote, they do well as a laborer. But then you go, well, you know, could you do this? And they say, yeah. So they promote them to manager, and then they promote them to foreman, and they promote them somewhere else until they eventually promote them to where they're completely ineffective and an abject failure at what they're doing. The same thing applies to, I don't know what the name for this is, but I'm going to call it Wells's theory of collapse, where you take anything and it evolves and refines it. It's refined and refined and refined until it reaches a point, and then it falls down and starts over again. And I think that's what's happened there. I mean, it seems a little incongruous to me. I mean, can these people make it on $15,000 a year? Clearly, people are surviving on $15,000 a year, but I'll bet it's not easy. So do I blame them for wanting to make more money? No, I don't. Do they do excellent work? Yes, they do. Can we afford to pay $80 an hour for somebody to do something that a computer could do? Well, morally, we should do that. Morally, we should not, morally speaking, to do the right thing by a fellow human being, we should not employ a machine to do what a human can do, because there, so far, there's really no substitute for machines except, I mean, for the human being, except in certain instances where brute strength is required. But look, I would like to be able to embrace the what the man who called earlier, I've lost his name, there's a stack of names here, and send some love toward Washington and so forth. But you know, I think we have sent him love. I think we've elected him. I think we've elected them, and we've sent them back, and we've sent them our money, and we've given them our support, and we've shaken their hands, and they've kissed our babies, and then they just turned around and just either stabbed us in the back in many cases, or allowed somebody else to do it, or arranged for somebody else to do it. This is figurative speaking as well as literal in some cases. I'm all for sending love to our leaders, but I think I'd rather send them a love-wrapped message that they had better do the will of the people, or the people are going to throw them out. And I don't care whether they're called Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, Tea Partiers. I don't care. I don't care anymore what the label is any more than I care who perpetrated 9/11. I want them caught. So whatever we need to label ourselves to get these people to lead, not leech, I'm for that. Could we speak to Al on the wild card line in Dickinson, Texas?
Hey, John, how's it going?
It's going all right, I think. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I just wanted to say hello to the world. It's my first time calling, and I've been a long-time listener. And I just wanted to tell you that I'm a researcher as well, and I've been deep in the rabbit hole, and I have so much research that I don't have enough time to tell you everything. But I just wanted to say that I read this book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. And if you read the book, it will tell you what's going on. Just like you said, we voted for these people and they stabbed us in the back. Well, these people have been blackmailed, and that's why they always do what we don't want them to do. Now, you want to know about 9/11. But what was more important was the day before at 9:10 when Rumsfeld went on TV to say that we lost $3 trillion and we don't know where it went. So
somebody does.
My thing is, pardon me?
Somebody knows where it went.
Yeah, exactly. But what happened was the very next day, somebody was filming the towers. And, you know, normally when somebody's videotaping something, there's always a movement or something. There's no complete standstill. And, you know, you just see this complete, like somebody had a tripod set towards the buildings. And not only that, but this gentleman by the name of Jim Humble, who invented MMS, which is the miracle mineral supplement, which cure AIDS and cancer. But the FDA has been going after him, and he's been moving around because his life's on the line. And it's just, but you try to do good, and you just, you know, instead of them taking it and helping people, because what happens? You know, we start getting into sticky situations. We start talking about the FDA, and we start talking about the WHO, and, You know, they just, if we have a cure for cancer and a cure for AIDS, what are we going to do with all their medicines? And not only that, I just saw some research and they were talking about the medical marijuana, how much it helped people and how, you know, I hear federal. Well, you know, you say federal government, that almost sounds like global government, because everyone's always saying, well, why doesn't the IRS audit the Fed? Well, that's their boss. They're not going to go, hey, boss, I need to see what you're spending the money on. I need to see where everything is going.
Well, there have been allegations that the SEC has been covering up some of the shenanigans up on Wall Street. I mean, none of this would surprise me. And the fact of the matter is if you keep poking your stick into that cage, that tiger is going to figure out a way to open that door and shred you up. But the thing about it is, I've said this before and I'll say it again, this is a temporary realm, though. We are only in this realm temporarily. And it would probably be best if we decided what exactly we're going to stand for and whether or not we're going to help each other with this. Because you see, there is so much information now. One of the problems that I see here is that there is now so much information out there now. There is so much to filter. You can't figure out which end of the tube the round comes out by the time you've gone through the day.
You can't tell misinformation or misleading information. But, you know, you feel what's right and wrong. You don't need someone to tell you. You already know it. You can feel it. And, you know, you're talking about sending love and, you know, to Washington and all that. Well, there's a whole big picture, you know, going on over there. And like you were saying, you know, we the people are the government. You, I, me, we, for us, by us, we are the government. And this federal government is, you know, just trying to destroy that. And, you know, they're just going against everything, you know, the Patriot Act. So you're telling me that pedophiles and rapists and murderers and robbers all have rights, but if someone wants to speak the truth, now I hear conspiracy theorists, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a reality theorist, and I have to say that I did hear that from Alex Jones, and that was, you know, really good. So there's a lot of other gentlemen like Jordan Maxwell, Michael Piskorian, and, you know, you can listen to these guys. There's ex-pilots who have flown their planes for over 20 years saying that they couldn't do what guys that just went to go learn how to fly a plane real quick learn how to do. So
totally understood and appreciated, and you're absolutely right. The only thing that we can do is continue to learn, continue to educate ourselves, talk with our neighbors. Don't do that thing that don't allow that to happen, what Ray Bradbury wrote in his book Fahrenheit 451, where sitting on the front porch talking to your neighbors was just not the done thing anymore. That's what they do. They divide and they conquer. So first thing to resist is division. We'll be back with your calls, and thank you very much for that out of Texas, Al. And we'll get to Mary and Jeff and Fred and a bunch of you, if you'll just hang on. I'm John B. Wells, and this is Coast to Coast AM. That's right. Look straight ahead. Yesterday is gone. Don't turn away if you take it on. That's right. So, and about the voices, I want to hear your voices. As a matter of fact, I think I would like to hear some of your voices right now. Why don't we speak with Mary in Milwaukee, home of Milwaukee Iron. I mean, Harley Davidson's and some pretty good suds too, I understand. Mary, are you there?
Yes, I am, John. Yes, I have some insight into this financial mess that the world occurs to be with.
Well, let's hear it.
Back in, I'll take everybody back to 2007 when, you know, we were, the world was going to burn up, you know, with global warming. And it was a pretty tenuous year, hot year. But near the end of 2007 into early 2008, the global temperatures fell 1.13 degrees Fahrenheit. I was watching this closely because I was very interested in this and so forth. And in October of 2008, Lehman Brothers investment bank went under, which started the financial crisis.
Right.
I know for a fact, I knew at the time, that Lehman Brothers was invested heavily, very heavily, in wind and solar. And they took it up. And subsequent to that, a lot of other investment banks went under and so forth.
Hey, Mary. Mary, I don't want to cut you off, but let me ask you something. Can you... I'm getting a lot of noise out of your telephone. I do want to hear what you're saying, so it just see if you can improve the transmission quality just a little bit, any way you can, because I want to hear what you're saying.
Is
I know the rest
better?
Of. Oh yeah, it's much better. Keep rolling. Oh, you're doing well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, like I said, Lehman Brothers, I knew it at the time. I knew it in early 2008 that they were invested heavily in wind and solar.
Right.
And of course. Before the end of the year was out, they bit the dust.
Now, let me ask you a quick question. How did you determine they were heavily invested in wind and solar? Is this something that most people would run across? I did not pick that up.
Well, no, I just happened to be looking at something. There was a scientist from Canada who had written a report for the Senate. And there were a number of scientists who were against the global warming issue at the time.
Okay, gotcha.
And he was one of 100 hundred scientists who had got on the bandwagon against global warming. And he came out in his report and said that that this was all a big a Wall Street thing,
right.
Big investment thing. And he, at the time, wrote that Lehman Brothers was invested heavily in wind and solar. So that's how I learned about it.
Understood.
Okay. So, and then subsequent to that, financial crisis happened into 2009, and then of course Obama came in, and he was into clean energy. And I believe that there's a schism going on right now in the banking world over what kind of energy we are going to move forward with. And I think it takes us right up through, the TARP situation. I know a lot of these people were invested in mitigation and adaptation. I'm talking about the World Bank, the IMF, I'm trying to think of the big insurance company. I can't think of the name of it. I'm sure you may know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
That TARP bailed out.
Yes.
And that. And then Obama comes in, and he's into clean energy.
You're talking about AIG, yeah?
I'm sorry?
Are you talking about AIG?
Yes, thank you. It was
okay,
AIG.
Good. Yep.
But anyway, Obama comes in, and he's pushing the green energy, and he's very much against the oil industry. You can take it up to the moment here with Solyndra. And that I believe that this financial crisis that the world appears to be in right now is directly related to our energy and what kind of energy we are going to have in the future. I do know that there are people out there that definitely want us to move away from coal and oil to go into wind and solar and clean energy. But I absolutely am convinced that this problem that we have in the financial world right now is related to a schism that's going on over the energy movement as to which way the world is going to move. And that's my insight here.
Well, if you don't mind my asking, you sound, you're very articulate, and these are some good insights. What led you to have these insights? Is it the line of work that you're in, or are you a professor of some sort, or what? How'd you get so smart about this stuff? I mean, how'd you get so smart about this stuff?
I was good at putting puzzles together as a child.
Well, that's where it starts.
Like you said a little while ago, there is so much information in front of everyone that you can't make heads or tails out of it. Oftentimes, the information comes so quickly. But I just believe that Solyndra, when the
story comes out about Solyndra, I think a lot of this is going to unfold. And that I do not believe that I do believe there are monsters in the world, but I believe that the World Bank, the world at large, back in 2007, was convinced that we had no choice but to change course. There was a book out there that was written by a scientist in England entitled The Revenge of Gaia. And when I read that book in 2007, I could not believe what I was reading. This was a very noted scientist who said, hey, sorry to tell you, we've got less than 100 years and we're all going to be dead. And I'm going, really? I mean, and it was serious. And I believe that a lot of people in very high places believe that we had no choice but to basically shut the engine down. And that's what this scientist was saying at the time. And somebody figured out how to solve the problem. And the train was going in one direction and it had to stop. And it's got to turn around, and it's hard to turn a big train around. I really believe that's what's happening here. I don't believe there are people out there. I mean, when they tell people that it was the subprime mortgage, that's ridiculous. That they're telling people a line of baloney, as my father used to say.
Mary, thank you very much.
I really believe that this is going to prove itself in not too long.
Well, just this once, I hope you're wrong, but I have a feeling that you may be right. And thank you very much for your insights and for hanging on the line so long. Tell you what, let's take a little, we have a little floating break. So let's float for a second, and then we'll come back to Jeff in Missouri on Coast to Coast AM. Please stay with us. From one fellow Missouri mule to another one, Jeff in Ferguson, are you there?
Hello?
Jeff?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. How you doing? Come on in.
Oh, pretty good. Just enjoying the nice fall weather we're starting to get. I want to comment real quick about the satellite before I talk about 9/11 real quick.
Okay.
I sure hope there's not any of those radioactive microbes that will start a zombie plague when it crashes.
Yeah, I'll tell you, those zombies can be a real problem. However,
that was a joke.
I recommend the 450 Bushmaster on the AR platform. That usually does a pretty good job on them.
That was obviously a joke.
I know, man. Me too.
I know. I kind of, that's usually the plot in all those movies. Something comes in and there's something.
I'm not that easy.
Yeah, but I want to comment about why people believe there was a conspiracy behind 9/11, if I could.
Sure, go ahead.
Everything I've looked into on this, it always seems like the conspiracy, the different conspiracies are more complicated than what the actual crime is said to have been. Because the official account is that 19 hijackers got on the planes and hijacked them with box cutters and knives or whatever. But it seems like the conspiracies behind some of these, like planting explosives in two, how many tall stories and no one's noticed them, planting the stuff and all this other type of diverting planes or any of that stuff. It just seems like the conspiracies is more complicated than the actual event.
Well, you got a point there. Things are generally much more simple than they appear on the surface, but that's just all a part of the confusion technique.
And another reason, I think on September 10th, 2001, I'm not saying things were perfect, but things were relatively calm, okay, with the United States. You know, we weren't sitting on top of the world or anything like that, but we were doing pretty good. And we just got sucker punched thinking that no one could hurt us like this. And boom, it happens. And they couldn't believe it happened like that.
Well, and more to the point, it's like, let's see, who would actually be capable of doing something like this? Oh, I know. We would.
Or listen, thanks else? For the... Or anyone else somewhere that with the resource, we're not the only ones capable out there.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm just wondering what the real agenda is, and it's becoming clear as time goes by. There's a, you know, generally these things are much more simple than they appear. You know, how many times have you looked back and gone, you know what? I should have seen that coming. I should have seen that stock purchase. I should have seen that Microsoft is going to be huge. Oh, I should have bought this. And, you know, looking back on it now, I see it so clearly now. That's why we have little cliches like hindsight's 20/20. Once we know the answer, then we'll also know, oh, yeah, well, that's what I thought, but nobody acted on it, and that's just the way it is. Listen, I appreciate your call very, very much, and thanks for the input. On the wild card line, is Fred in Rochester, New York, still there?
Yes, I am. John.
Excellent.
Stop holding down the fort.
Sorry, say that again. I'm sorry.
I said you're doing a great job holding down the fort.
Oh, well, no wonder I asked for him to say it again. Well, thank you very much. But it all revolves around you, brother. So what you got to bring to this little Friday night party?
Well, I'm calling it. I'm just concerned about the average, everyday working American citizen with the I heard your first guest, and I'm just concerned when a world depression hits that we as a people now just aren't as hardy as the people were in the 30s to be able to deal with the hard times that may be coming.
You know, and I think it's just a, don't you think it's just a matter of doing, just doing more with, I mean, this sounds so cliche, and that's the second time I've used that word in less than 2 minutes, but don't you think it's just a matter of doing more with less? I mean, do we really need all this stuff? Remember that old song by King Crimson, 21st Century Schizoid Man, one of the lines in it is, nothing he's got he really needs. I mean, how much do we need? I mean, it's greed that's now turning to avarice.
I can tell you myself, I'm not living in real a lot of excess right now. I'm just trying to hold myself above the water here. And, you know, if we come down to like a world depression because of all the markets collapsing, it's just, I think it's going to be pretty difficult for the average American to survive. And when you get our government officials wasting so much money, when every time you turn around, you hear another story about another scandal where, you know, they're throwing taxpayer money away, or they're hiding money because they're having sex with all their little helpers, you know, the co-ops and stuff like that. They're supposed to be working for us, trying to get us out of these problems, and it's just a big part of them. It kind of reminds me of ancient Rome when they were ready to collapse.
Well, that's right, and you know, the thing about it is even after the collapse started, it still drug on for a long time. It didn't just fall down overnight. It went into decay, and there was a long slide to the bottom, you know?
Well, you know, you take a look at the fact that, you know, our country is probably still owed money from World War One and World War Two from countries like China and Russia. But when it seems like countries really get up against it, like take Germany, when they really don't have any other options, war is what ends up bringing countries out of depression. And in this day and age, war is getting so deadly that, you know, it's not something that you can just wipe out a certain amount of people and end up bringing your country out of a depression.
Well, that's really true. And one of the things that concerns me a little bit is that, and, you know, I don't mean any disrespect to anybody that's in the service. I'm the son of a sailor, and my son's the son of a sailor, and all of that. And, I mean, there was so much dignity and so much sacrifice and so much accomplished, but
well, you'll never find a better patriot than me, so don't even put me in anywhere near that, because I'm 100% behind all of our servicemen. 1,000%.
Let me just pose a hypothetical at you. I'm not saying that I think this, but it has crossed my mind. If we have a volunteer army or volunteer service, and we have a government that's running them around all over the world, I mean, that's what our soldiers do. They do what they're told, and they do it really well. And it's still, our military forces are still unsurpassed in effectiveness and capability and intelligence and everything else. But it concerns me just a little bit that we are a volunteer armed forces now, and we participate in undeclared conflicts. And certainly somebody could make a case. I'm not trying to make it. I'm just bringing up the possibility that a case could be made for this being a mercenary army, paid soldiers that go where the government tells them to go. And if the government is in fact run by who we think it is, which would be the banking entities, that pretty much seals it, doesn't it? What do you think about that?
Unfortunately, you have, you know, loyalty. Our soldiers are loyal.
That's a fact.
And if just like I said with ancient Rome, if the top is corrupt and you're sitting there following because you're loyal, thinking that you're doing everything for your country, you know, you really don't get to really question up that high. It's up to the people that do the voting to make sure that the soldiers are able to follow someone who's supposed to be competent in leading them in a moral endeavor.
That's very, very well said, and thank you very much for your call. At this moment, could I just, this is personal. This is, well, not deeply personal, but it's personal enough. I think maybe it might be time for us to stop electing heavily moneyed people. People who have so much money that they think that they're immune, and for the most part they are immune, to prosecution of any kind. They make up the rules as they go along. They partner with other wealthy people, and they just pick and choose what they let us know or what they don't let us know, and they just continue in their way with impunity. I think it's a very good thing that people like the Andrew Jacksons, Abe Lincoln didn't come from money. Jackson didn't come from money, as I recall. It's possible that the greatest intelligence lies with you. So no more of this 40% of the people turned out to vote. Prepare to vote. Prepare to make a decision. And stay with us. I'm John B. Wells. This is Coast to Coast AM.